Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/NSS and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. And by WordPress. Your customers want to find you, so build a WordPress.com website and help them connect with your business. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/NSS.
A pocketable mini laptop, the Asus ZenFone AR, plus back-to-school tech for students and parents. Live from the Twit Eastside Studios in beautiful Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers.
Michael Mercer from Houston, Texas, trained professional, I think. That was
nailed it.
That was
nailed
quite
it.
Well done.
One take.
And Michael washed up here from thanks to Harvey, right? Is everybody okay back home?
Straight here, everybody. Yeah. Home is doing good.
All right.
Love you all.
Yeah, love everybody in the Gulf area. And sorry that you had to suffer that storm, but I gather it's weakening and everything's going to be...
Yeah.
No? I hope
lots
so.
Lots of rain. Lots
Three
of rain.
3 feet in some areas. 36 inches. Hey, look at that! That's Father Robert Ballas there. He is no longer silent.
Well, I mean, technically I should still be in silence, but we won't tell anyone.
Can we talk to the Pope and get you back in silence?
Just you can email him. I've got his Twitter.
So. You were on your... I'm going to explain this. You don't mind if I do?
No, not at all.
Father, we call him the Digital Jesuit. He's a Jesuit priest, I think it's just cool to have a Jesuit priest, especially when you do ads, because I think then we know that you're responsible to a higher authority.
Of course.
You're not going to make anything up. But I guess the Jesuits, unique among Catholic priests, do a several-stage system of taking your vows. You took vows to become a priest, but
many
your
years
final
ago.
Vows come after something called a tertianship.
That's correct.
Which is a final period, often a year-long, of reflection involving silence and really thinking about your vocation and whether you want to pursue it.
Precisely right. It's the easiest way to think of it is when I took vows the first time 23 years ago, I was saying I wanted to be a Jesuit. When I take final vows after tertianship's done, that's the society saying we want you to be a Jesuit.
Oh, wow.
So it's sort of
that's
a reciprocal nice. Thing. It's the last stage, and this summer that I did just now in Portland, I was basically in silence for about 60 days.
I don't know how you do that.
It's actually kind of nice.
Yeah.
And trust me, when I got out of silence and I started going through all the news stories I missed, I kind of wanted to go back in silence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that means not merely silence, but you don't have access to a computer, the internet, you can't read newspapers, you can't do anything. You're in a period of reflection.
Right. And it's not the world is bad. The whole thing is to give you space to do the work that you need to do.
We all
yourself.
Should be doing that. I think
it's nice.
A digital kind of time out.
That's a super digital cleanse.
Yeah. You're going to do it again next year.
Right. So I've got one more. Normally it's 9 months straight, but because of the work that I do here at Twit, they allowed me to split it up. So I'm doing 2 months and 2 months.
I'm really pleased. They were very generous letting us have more of Father Robert. So thank you. We have a big show coming up for you. In fact, this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to show you a computer. Actually, I have it in my pocket right now.
I'm kind of afraid to ask.
I'm going to show you a laptop. You're going to want this.
Okay.
I know you,
okay.
And you're going to want this. You're going to go back to school.
Yes, it's time. And you know what? I think you and Megan did a fantastic job of looking at some laptops and tablets and phones. And I kind of want to leave that alone and look at some accessories, not just for students, but if you're a parent with a student, I got a little something you're going to want to take a look at.
A bunch of back-to-school suggestions. Mm-hmm. Megan Maroney gives us part three of her digital cleanse. We're all app crazy. Maybe you have too many apps in your phone. She'll tell you how to clean them up. We're going to solve a Wi-Fi problem in India.
Yeah. You know, this is actually a problem that it's not just happening in India. A lot of people are going to have this. And thankfully, we've got one person who was brave enough to ask us.
Thank you. As always, the questions are usually questions everybody wants to know the answer. Mm-hmm. But most people go, I'm not asking that. Fortunately, Suhail will. And then Jason Howell. He's going to review his Asus Zenfone.
I am very much looking forward to this. I've been following Project Tango since it was first announced by Google. And over the years, we've seen decent implementations, but this is supposed to be the first one that just works. You're going to be able to pick this thing up and experience AR the way that Google wants you to experience it. But, you know, it is still kind of early days, so I want to see what Jason has to say.
This is going
to
be the crazy phone season. Yeah. We wanted to show you the Essential phone. Andy Rubin's, you know, he's the guy who created Android, new phone. I was I got an invitation to pre-order it 10 days ago, August 16th. They said, it'll be in your hands within 7 days. We thought we'd be able to review it by now. It is not. A few lucky few, like Marques Brownlee, have had a chance to hold it. But I really want to, and I think The Verge had, Dieter Bohnen, mm-hmm. The Verge had a review. I really am looking forward to seeing this phone, titanium and ceramic. And I'm curious about that.
This really bummed me out when you told us that they hadn't gotten it yet.
By now.
I wanted to play with it. I actually just want to hold it and see what does a premium, really truly premium Android phone look like. I think this is it. Except for the fact that all the rumors that are starting to come back are saying, well, they're having trouble with this, with that camera.
This is one
hardware.
Reason I prefer to do it our way. Yes, we're not going to have the first reviews, but I bought it.
Yep.
Which means I'm going to get the same unit you're going to get. All the current reviewers are using pre-production software. Mm-hmm. In fact, you just saw a little bit from, I think it was Gizmodo's review, in which he said, I got a new update to the camera almost every day I've had this phone. See, I don't want to be in that situation. I don't think you can reasonably review a pre-production model. You need to review the models that are hitting the stores. So I'm going to wait. When we get it, we'll give you a review of it. And then we'll have the final camera software. If it's still not good, well, that'll be a bigger issue. Right now, I don't think you can judge because you're not using the final version.
Right. This is the whole, well, they've tweaked it for the reviewers. Of course, they're putting the best foot forward.
They don't know I'm a reviewer.
Yeah, the way you do it. I've always loved the way that you do reviews, which is it's your skin in the game. It's your money. And so if it's not worth that money, we're going to get an honest opinion.
That's the disadvantage. Because, okay. In fact, now it's going to go crazy because we just, of course, the Note 8 mm-hmm. was announced on Wednesday.
That's $1,000 phone.
That's literally a $1,000 phone. I said, because Jason Howell of mm-hmm. All About Android usually wants all the Android phones. I like to try every phone I can. Jason said, are we going to order two? I said, no. I got the Essential. You get the Note 8. We'll compare notes. Maybe we'll borrow each other's phones. I think that's going to be more affordable that way. And then, of course, it's not over because we're going to see new Pixel phones from Google at sometime in the next couple of months. But in the next 3 weeks, we should see a new Apple iPhone.
A new iPhone.
Crazy. This is the crazy season. Anyway, we'll take a look at this Asus Zenfone AR. That should be interesting. That's out now. You can buy that now. The Note 8 wasn't the only big story from Samsung.
No, and it's not the only thing that thankfully didn't explode.
Lee Jae-young, who is the Samsung. So one thing about Samsung is kind of interesting. It's and many Korean companies are like this, family run. It's a dynasty. It's not, mm-hmm. you know, when we talk about Ford, in the early days, Ford was run by the Ford family. But, you know, and I think there's still Ford family members on the board. But it's run by professional managers. And maybe Samsung is, but the people at the top, the president of Samsung, had a heart attack this spring. And his son, the vice chairman, Lee Jae-young, took over for him. But then, bad news, Lee Jae-young was indicted for a bribery scandal. And on Thursday, he was convicted and will be in jail for 5 years. The guy running Samsung.
Now, I don't think people realize how big of legs this story has. Because for years and generations, there's been this unspoken rule that in Korea, it's the conglomerations that really run everything. And people were fine with that because they were bringing so much economic prosperity to the country that they didn't mind if Samsung kind of operated above the law or LG got special favors, et cetera, et cetera. As long as they were making sure that the people were taken care of, it was fine.
Samsung is a fifth of all of South Korea's exports. Now, it's not just phones.
No.
It's TVs. It's dishwashers.
Heavy machinery. It's ships.
Bulldozers. Yeah. It's ships.
their revenue, 17% of their GDP. So it's as if you took, there's nothing like this in the United States.
It would be like taking the state of California.
Yeah, and saying we're putting you in jail for 5 years.
Yeah.
So this is a big of shocker that, A, he got jail time. And it's going to be an interesting thing to see how Samsung survives.
This is a shot across the bow to all the conglomerates.
How
to say, look,
we
know how things worked in the past. Bribery was sort of par for the course. But you can't do that anymore. This is a new Korea. They just ousted a couple of leaders. There's a new political climate. And people are saying, look, thank you for bringing us the economic prosperity, but you don't run the country.
It's amazing.
We run the country.
I kind of admire that, frankly.
Yeah, I really do.
Big day on Monday. The Amazon acquisition of Whole Foods will be final. I'm surprised this seemed to go through pretty smoothly. I thought there'd be a little bit of antitrust stuff. After all, Amazon is becoming the dominant retailer in every space in the country. And by the way, the stock prices for all the other big grocery chains.
17% in the first hour after the announcement.
They're
just
crazy.
Massive drop.
But this is good news, at least in the short term for us, because, and it's Whole Foods, remember, Whole Foods prices are coming down on Monday. Big deals, I'm not kidding, on kale. Avocados and salmon.
Okay, so I love avocado and I love salmon.
It's Whole Foods. You're going to have to have some kale. I'm sorry. No, you have to have some kale. Eat their kale. Sorry.
Honey drizzled kale, maybe. Honey drizzled kale that's been baked so it's crisp. Maybe.
You know what? You can make kale like chips.
Yes.
Chips,
yeah, you bake it.
And it's very good.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even know you're eating kale.
Now, they've tied
it takes
in,
all the nutrition out of it, but that's okay.
I'm not caring for
that's
the nutrition.
So
I want the taste.
Yeah.
But they've tied in Amazon Prime with the Whole Foods reward program, which I don't exactly know how it works. We have a Whole Foods near our house. I've just never been in the right economic bracket to be able to go in.
Whole paycheck.
So, but now I've got Amazon Prime, so let's go.
I once bought a steak at Whole Foods for $30. This is not cooked. Doesn't come with potatoes and fries and it's...
Okay, but let me ask you about this. I mean, the whole thing about Whole Foods is they've had this almost impenetrable armor that allowed them to charge Starbucks prices for food that others weren't.
Well, not anymore.
Not anymore. And that's
a good thing.
I was always wondering, why would Amazon want that when Amazon is known for price pressure? They just drive it down and down and down.
Well, let's watch. They are going to drive it down and down and down. And so did the Kroger stock, down and down and down and down.
But doesn't that kill what they bought? I mean, they bought the premium brand.
That's the whole point. They make it up in volume.
Okay.
No, Amazon is really... This is where you've got to look at Jeff Bezos and think, this guy is 12 moves ahead of everybody else. He is
He's a chess master.
And his plan isn't really about making profit today. It never has been. In fact, remember in the early days of Amazon, they deferred profit so they could build all those fulfillment centers. Now they're reaping the benefit of that. But instead of just sort of raking it in, they're profitable, but they're not raking it in. They're now reinvesting in other things. The ultimate goal for Amazon is to control every financial transaction in the country. Every purchase you make will go through Amazon. Your food, your clothing, your dry goods, your cameras, your computers. Every one of them. And they don't have to take a lot. They can take a few cents. Because if every transaction goes through them, it's a lot of money in the long run.
Isn't it strange, though, how this is sort of the reverse typical American dream? In the American dream, you created a retail store, and then maybe it got popular, and you had 2 and 3 and 10 and 20, and then you built up the logistical power behind it so that you could supply all your retail locations. Amazon is the opposite. They built an infrastructure juggernaut, and now they're saying, okay, let's create some retail space.
Yeah, but I think it makes sense because I think they're gonna. We've talked a lot about this, and I'm fascinated by it. Whole Foods in Austin, which is their hometown, is an experience. It's not a grocery store. They have a coffee. You've been there, right, Jerry? They have a coffee shop. They have, I mean, you can buy coffins. I don't know. What?
They have restaurants.
Restaurants inside. I mean, it's everything, right? Actually, no, that's Costco. You can buy a coffin. I'm sorry. You can buy. But I mean, it's an.
It will
the
be.
The point is, it's a shopping. It's an experience. It's not about what you buy. And I think ultimately Amazon will ship everything.
Yes.
You don't go to the store to buy things. You go to the store to have experiences, to look at products before you buy. You won't go to Amazon, Whole Foods, to buy the kale. You'll swipe the kale.
I'm still not eating kale.
Yeah.
No.
And it will come to your door. You know, remember that Amazon also has HelloFresh. I mean, that's the name of it, right?
Yes.
Not HelloFresh. Amazon Fresh.
Amazon Fresh.
HelloFresh is a different
Prime
company.
Prime Fresh, something like that.
Yeah. That's a delivery company, right? And they're opening up all over the country. It's going to be, I think, it's very interesting. I worry about a total monopoly in all economic transactions. But at the same time, they win because of the convenience.
It is. I have bought pretty much everything off of Amazon for the last 5 years.
I was looking at my Amazon purchase orders. And you can do that, by the way. You can even go back to the very first thing you bought. And it's been a steady uptick. And I'm almost buying something every day now at Amazon. I mean, it probably is hundreds of things every year. It's really remarkable. Elon Musk, another brilliant genius.
Who is many moves ahead of people.
Another guy playing chess at a different level. He created X.com, remember, and sold it to PayPal, got some PayPal money. I think it was a little under $200 million.
Yeah, you know.
Then took that money, put it into SpaceX, Citizen Space Exploration, and Tesla, the electric car manufacturer. And now he's building more and more companies. He's got the Boring Company, which is anything but boring. The whole plan of the Boring Company is to bore a tunnel underneath Los Angeles to ease traffic congestion. His latest is something, I think this is great, something called Neuralink. That comes straight out of Snow Crash, straight out of sci-fi, straight out of Neuromancer. I don't want to wear a visor. I don't want to wear Google Glass. I don't want to wear a HTC Vive. I want to be in virtual reality. I want to jack in, right, where you have a hole in your neck and you put a big fat cable in the hole. That's what Neuralink is about. It's a way to tie your computer to your brain directly. And if it sounds science fiction, and maybe it is, you should know he's just raised $27 million to do it.
And the technology is actually, it's not as in its infancy as people might think.
Really?
We did a visit to the medical campus of the University of San Francisco, and they had they have an entire lab that's dedicated to this type of science, and they were able to show what was going on in the brain just with a couple of electrodes that were attached to a skull cap. This is just taking that existing technology, making it easier to apply so I don't have to have bare skin, and potentially tying it to something that can actually interpret the impulses that are coming out of our brain. So,
well, yes. I've seen it for people who lose an arm.
Oh, yeah,
they can control limbs and so forth. I think this is exciting. I don't know
how close we
are. But I hope by the time I'm before I die, maybe when I'm in the nursing home, I can jack in and then I won't have to
get
out of bed anymore.
There's two competing technologies that are getting a lot of mind share right now. And the one is sort of the old electrodes on the skull in order to detect impulses.
Yeah.
The problem is you have to go through your skull. So the impulses are very weak. A lot of times you can't capture them.
No, they need to drill a hole.
Or there is another technology called fMRI, functional MRI.
I've seen these,
And that can do real-time patterning of what's going on in your brain.
Right.
If you can shrink that technology down, that is literally just
the
hat. It's the hat. Nothing in your head,
hat.
No boring into your brain, and you can have your interface.
Okay, maybe.
I don't know.
Pretty exciting. Did you see the eclipse?
I looked straight at it.
Yeah, because you were in Petaluma? No. It was completely overcast on Monday.
I had to drive 45 minutes down south from San Francisco just to try to catch it. And I got a little bit of it.
We got no clear skies, but many of our staff went up to Oregon and saw it. Before we talk about that, I want to talk about Alaska Airlines.
Oh.
So if you think about it, where would be the best place to see an eclipse? Well, 35,000 feet, right? There's no clouds.
That helps.
You'd have thin atmosphere. You'd probably get a great view. The only problem is, how fast is the eclipse moving across the country?
Thousands of miles.
Thousands of miles. A plane can't keep up, right? So a plane has roughly the same problem you and I do. You've got to find the right spot, and you've got to be there at the right time, and you're still only going to get a two-minute eclipse. It turns out to be a very challenging problem. Alaska Airlines thought, can we do this? They got astronomers, mathematicians, computer modelers, and, of course, pilots. And if you read the article at the Alaska Airline blog, it was a challenge because if the plane got delayed, they actually had to have kind of fallback points. There's the flight path on my screen here that they could make up time if they needed to. But they did it, and look at this view. Some very lucky passengers. This was a special flight.
Oh, that's amazing.
Got an amazing view Of course, you had to look through an airplane window. But an amazing view of the eclipse is the pilots putting on the eclipse glasses.
On their special. I don't want my pilot not being able to see anything.
Nobody's sitting on the left side of the plane because it's out the right window, right? Yeah. So they didn't sell tickets on the left side of the plane. Wow, they got a spectacular view of totality.
How did I not hear about this?
I know. I would have gone. I'm sure it was expensive. It was a five-hour flight. They had to kind of plan this route out over the Pacific in order.
No!
There you go. Look at that.
No!
Is that amazing? Is that an amazing view? Wow. They had an astronaut on board, astronomers, a lot of people very interested in this flight.
Okay, that's the way to see an eclipse.
Yeah!
Maybe that next time. That beats everything.
So John went up there. We actually, Anthony Nielsen went up there. John Slonina went up there. You went to Oregon to see it. We have some pictures, right, of their shot. This is the time lapse that I think Anthony Nielsen shot. Yeah. There's Russell Tammany.
There's Snubs.
Snubs and Anthony Nielsen. And there it's actually, do you have the audio on this? Because it's really fun to hear everybody exclaiming. Here's John. They were actually just a little bit lower down in the same area. You found they found a farmer who rented his land. So they were able to get a really, there's not a lot of
good
people.
Call, yeah.
And it was clear, right? You got a perfect view of the totality. Look at that. Whose video is this, John? That's John's video? All right. So a pretty amazing view.
That's just amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And that's John and his buddies there.
I kind of wish I...
to me, it wasn't about getting a picture of the eclipse, although John did bring a lot of gear, so did Russell. It was really about being in that place.
It's an experience.
That's why the audio is amazing. If you listen to John's, the audio of John's time lapse, or actually Anthony's time lapse, Anthony has, and they're like exclaiming, and oh my God! And I think that would be kind of cool. It's about the experience of experiencing it with others.
We have so few experiences like that anymore.
I agree.
We've demystified everything. That every once in a while it's nice to just say, hey, I know what's going on, but this still feels magical.
Steve, who had been here on a show a couple of weeks ago, July 25th, from Estacada, Oregon, says he was in Culver, Oregon, for the eclipse. He works for Lake Chinook Fire and Rescue, and he has a shot that he got with his telescope. What's neat about these eclipse photographs, at first they all look the same.
Right.
But everybody has a slightly different
view
of the
corona and the
prominences.
It's got a little solar flare. It's got a little solar flare popping up on the side there.
In some cases, you can see the Bailey's beads, which are actually caused by the valleys on the moon. And so there's some, if you look carefully, a lot of these pictures are very interesting. I read a great article by a photographer, I wish I could remember his name, who said, because I always don't want, when I'm in Paris, I don't want to take a picture of the Eiffel Tower. Everybody, and he said, no, you should, because everybody else takes a picture of the eclipse. But only one is your picture of the eclipse and a reminder of the experience you had. And that kind of reassured me. It's okay to take pictures of something everybody else is doing. Coming up, I'm going to show you my tiny Windows computer.
That's the thing in your pocket, right?
It's in my pocket.
Thank goodness.
I'm not just happy to see you. I have a computer in my pocket. But first, I want to talk about my tiny doorbell, my Ring Video doorbell. Mike Elgin, I gave Mike Elgin a Ring Video doorbell last time he was on because he has a great idea. He says, if you run an Airbnb, or, you know, you let people use your home, you should absolutely have a Ring Video doorbell just to know when people are coming and going, to speak to them if you need to. The Ring Video doorbell is awesome. It replaces your regular ding-donger, and it's easy to do. I did it myself, just a screwdriver, a couple of wires coming out of the door. You set the whole thing up. Then, instead of just ringing the chimes in the house, by the way, Ring sells a separate device that you can use to add chimes throughout your house just by plugging them into the wall. This pairs with your Wi-Fi. And anytime somebody even moves by your door, because it's got motion detection in it, you will see a picture of them. And if they ring your doorbell, you can answer it. You can say, hi, leave the package there. You can keep an eye on the package. If it's a bad guy, you can say, can I help you? And they can run away. Ring has added some new products to the line, including, I can't wait to get a bunch of these, the new Ring floodlight cams. So you've all seen, you know, the security camera, the floodlights, you know, that light up when people walk by, motion-sensitive floodlights. Well, this adds a Ring camera, microphone, and speaker to it. So you can also see when those lights come on who it is that lit up the lights, if it's a deer or a coyote or a bad guy. You can talk to them. You can hear them. And if you say, get out of here, go away, and they don't, You can also trigger a 110-decibel alarm from that Ring floodlight cam. And that pretty much guaranteed they're not going to be bothering you. Wall Street Journal's Best of CES 2017. If you go to ring.com/NSS, you can put together a Ring of security kit, save up to $150. We're big fans of the Ring video doorbell, whether the original Ring, which is what I have at my house, or the Ring Pro. You know, I can use my Echo Home, the one with the screen, the Echo Show.
Oh, right, yeah.
I can say, show my front door.
No.
And I can say, yes. Yes.
That's a skill?
It has a Ring skill.
I love that. Okay, that's awesome.
Ring.com/NSS. Not just for yourself, a great gift for loved ones, my older parents. It's a great gift for them. Set it up for them. They'll really appreciate it. And I didn't even think of this, but Mike Elgin, he says, if you're doing a rental, if you're Airbnb or something like that, you got to have a Ring. Ring video doorbell. Ring.com/NSS. Up to $150 off a Ring of security kit. All right. I have it in my pocket. I've been teasing it.
A Windows computer, and it fits in your pocket.
Yeah. Now, I've been reading about this. In fact, there's a whole subreddit on Reddit about it. It's GPD, the gaming pocket device.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Show me the money.
Show my pocket. This is it. That's a laptop
computer. Okay. To be fair, that's a big pocket. Right? I mean,
it's not that big. It's a 7-inch screen.
Ooh.
It's a Windows 10 device, although, and I'm very excited about this, I'm going to be able to put Linux on it as well. They offer an Ubuntu distribution that's tuned. Let me just log in real quickly if you'll hide your eyes.
Monkey123 is not a secure password.
I know, but no one else knows it. Let's see. I just ran Windows Update, so I won't restart now. But because I logged into it has my Windows. This is a beautiful 7-inch high-res screen.
So this is not S. This is full-featured Windows 10?
Full-featured, or, and I plan to put Linux on it. And it's $499. This is a USB 3. It's got a mini HDMI port, a regular headphone microphone jack. And this is a Type-C port, which works as data, but also as a charger.
That's the charger.
Very good battery life. I'm getting 4 to 6 hours of battery life on this thing. Now, of course, the biggest thing you're going to sacrifice, a couple of things. First of all, it is a small screen, a 7-inch screen, although it's a touch screen, which makes it kind of fun. In fact, because it's a touch screen and it's so high resolution, I feel like it's actually pretty usable. And depending on what you're doing, this is a really great tool for, you know, bringing along maybe to check your Ring video doorbell, play video games. The reason I want to put Linux on here is I want to put a command line and use the command line. It'd be great for that. So that's the other thing you got to question is, well, what am I giving up in terms of keyboard size? You can see these are almost full-size keys.
They made the important keys almost
full-size. They're big, and then they doubled up on things like the number row and the function key row. And then there's a little shift on the right, but there's a full arrow key T, as you would expect on a normal computer. Alt and Control on the right-hand side of the spacebar. Spacebar, they split, and that's because they have a TrackPoint-style mouse pointer. So you can, of course, connect a mouse with it. It's got a USB port.
It's the old nubbin.
But it's a nubbin, and I think it works quite well. Left and right mouse buttons, too. And that combined with the touch, I think is very usable. I have no trouble using it. I was kind of surprised. I type fairly accurately, not perfectly accurately. And there is, as I said, a lot of interest in this. It was an Indiegogo. They've made other computers. The GPD makes a Win computer, but this is their smallest, most powerful. For $499, you get an Atom processor running about 1.5 gigahertz.
Probably a dual core or a
dual core. Yeah. It's decent speed. 8 gigs of RAM, which is unusual for a computer at that price, and 128 gig SSD.
Okay.
So it's a very it's a performant computer. And this is a unibody aluminum case, so it feels kind of pro. 7,000 milliamp hour battery gives you enough battery life on something like this to last a few hours at least.
Yeah, an ARM processor on a 7,000 milliamp hour battery. I mean,
it's an Atom, not an ARM. It's it's an Intel processor. It's EMC SSD, so you get some EMMC, so you get some good performance on this. I think this is a really interesting device. $499 though means it's not a impulse purchase. It's a cost of a regular laptop.
It's a little pricey, but I see the use case for this because it actually has a physical keyboard attached. It's not connected via Bluetooth.
Right.
It's not an on-screen keyboard. That does give it some very interesting use points.
And, you know, it reminds me a little bit of my old Scion, which I loved.
Yeah.
I loved having a... It's a little bigger than that, but
I had an HP Jornada.
Right, the Giornata, remember that? Yeah. And for a while, Toshiba made those extra small laptops. But that's a category that's kind of disappeared. They call it a ultra-mobile PC, a UMPC.
I think you're right, though. I would love Linux on this because this would be my command line PC. So
that's
going into
exactly
a data center,
how
it's in my back pocket. I hook it up to a switch. I can do all the configuration I need.
And use a chat room on it. It'd be great for the chat room. They have to do, of course, some special stuff to make Ubuntu run on it, basically provide drivers for their hardware. But it's pretty generic hardware. I don't really understand this. I was going to do the review and then put Ubuntu. I'll do that tonight. It's a different BIOS as well as different operating system for Ubuntu. So I don't know exactly why that is. They're doing something, obviously, in the BIOS to make it more compatible with Ubuntu. They claim on their website, almost no laptop runs with Linux. That's far from true.
That's
I put Linux on almost all my Windows laptops. So this isn't the only Linux laptop.
This is not running UEFI, is it?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Maybe
I should go into
UEFI
BIOS.
For the Linux
that's
BIOS.
Probably, you know what, that's probably what they do. It's probably a UEFI BIOS for Windows, secure boot and all of that. And it's probably the Linux handles UEFI just fine. And in fact, you can even get signed versions of Linux that will work with a secure boot. But secure boot often provides some challenges for people.
Yes.
So maybe the BIOS is just simply a simple legacy BIOS, not using UEFI, or they eliminated secure boot, making it a little bit more compatible. I'm not sure. I will give you an update on this. But I have to say, so far, I love it. I took it on our trip. We went down to Anaheim for Podcast Movement, the big podcast expo, and I didn't bring a laptop. I just brought this, and it fits perfectly in a jacket pocket, a trousers front pocket, of course, a briefcase or purse, and it's not heavy.
This is perfect as a photographer's companion. You've got the card slot on it. No, you've got the USB.
Yeah.
So you could connect your camera to it, and it gives you a decent screen.
It's actually a really good screen. I think the color is excellent, and it's a full high def.
That's nice.
On a 7-inch screen, which means it's very high DPI. It's a 230, 240 DPI. It's very, very
This is
good.
A Kickstarter?
It was an Indiegogo.
An Indiegogo.
Yeah. And it might have been less. I think it was $50 less if you got it on Indiegogo, which makes it more attractive. But I bought it on Amazon, got 2-day delivery.
Oh, that's nice.
For $4.99.
That's very nice.
It's a Chinese company. The GPD stands for Gaming Pocket Device or Gamepad Digital. Maybe that's what it stands for. Gamepad Digital. They're out of Shenzhen, China. But I'm very impressed. I feel like this is, and I guess now they're selling $5.39, but that includes a case or something like that. So. I wouldn't get it on Indiegogo. I just was able to get it on Amazon, delivered right away. There are, as I said, there's a fairly active now pocket. That's me. Compare that. That's a good picture because
it looks like your laptop had a baby.
That's the tiny. That looks like the laptop on the right is a MacBook. So it's a small laptop to begin with. The GPD is even smaller. So there you go. I just thought I'd pass that word along. I wanted to
It's actually very cool.
Yeah, I want to put Linux on it and have more updates for you as time goes by. Let's see. What are we going to do next? I'm kind of all messed up on here.
Well, I'm thinking we should go back to school.
Is it time for yours?
It's time.
Your thing?
Let's do that.
All right. Let's talk because you have brought along
Some of the toys
that people might want to think about. Let me clear the decks.
Now, we were thinking about
this,
how we wanted to
do this. By the way, would
be
a good back-to-school laptop, don't you
excellent
think?
Back-to-school.
Yeah, yeah.
What you and Megan did a really good job on covering notebooks and tablets.
This is because her daughter was going into high school and wanted to know, should I get Windows, Mac, or Chromebook? I told her Chromebook.
Yeah, I just got an R13 that I'm loving.
That's
an
the Acer
R13. It's the a convertible that also runs the Android apps as well, and it's really, really well done. But we figured you've done that to death. You've got it. You gave them the definitive guide.
We don't need to go more on that. No.
Precisely. So instead, what if we looked at some of the accessories that I'm thinking people should have in their bags as you're going back to school, either as a high school student or a college student? There are a couple of things that you should think about including in your gear bag.
I like one of them right away.
The first one is, this is the super simple one and the one that you can just buy right off the base. This is just a USB drive, so it's not sexy.
You need one of those.
You do need these. And what I like about these from Kingston is the fact that they control, they have both USB 3 and USB-C support.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
That's actually super important.
It's like a double adapter, Type-C and Type-A.
Precisely. And if you format this with the XFAT, it means it will work on Mac, it'll work on Windows, it will work on Linux just fine. I can plug this into my Windows PC, load a bunch of files into it, and then plug it into my USB-C-enabled Android phone, and it works just fine.
Now, you have to have USB to go to do that.
Right.
So all Android phones will do precisely. That, but that is still very cool.
Right. Or the USB-C port on your MacBook. This will work just as fine on that as well. So, I mean, if
that's
you're...
That's everything.
And these are not expensive. I mean, you're looking at $20 for the 32-gigabyte versions. You're looking at about $30 for the 64-gigabyte versions. I picked up a 10-pack of these things for about...
A 10-pack?
Well, because I use them all the time. For about $220... And with all the 64-gigabyte versions, and these have taken over my bag. I have nothing but these.
That's not bad.
That's not bad at all. However,
I was going to show you something in my bag.
Oh,
that's
you've got
similar.
The adapter?
I have no, but what I have is a terabyte hard drive. This is one of those Samsung. Where is it? The problem is it's too small, and I keep losing it. That is one of these Samsung. That's what I thought you were going to talk about. This is a great idea for a backup drive. Look at that.
That's
is a terabyte
nice
SSD. And they have now a 2-terabyte version of this from Samsung. They're not. See how easy that was to steal? And, of course, it is USB Type 3, so it's very, very fast. That means this can be used easily for a student or anybody who needs a lot of storage to back up things like your schoolwork, but also audio and video, movies, whatever you need. So that's a really nice.
I like that.
This reminded me of yours. I thought, you know, solid state storage has come a long way.
Oh, I've got a little something like that. But before I get to that, I mean, 1 terabyte. That's pretty
good. Amazing.
I like that. I like
that. Or 2.
Or you could go. I don't know. How about
now? What do you got?
2 terabytes.
Oh yeah, you show off. You. Okay. What is that?
This is a Kingston. This is 2 terabytes on a flash drive.
See, that's even more storage. This is kind of neat looking too.
It's neat looking. Now this is more or less a showpiece. They showed off the 1 terabyte version at CES a couple of years back, and then this year they had the 2 terabyte version. A little pricey, Leo.
How much?
Oh, this might go for $15. So okay,
you're paying for
this
the beautiful
is probably
aluminum
not
styling.
Back to school, but yeah,
holy cow!
And it's pretty fast. Actually, this is much faster than most USB flash drives. This one will run 300 megabytes per
second.
You know
what this is?
And 200 write.
You've heard of geek battles?
Yeah,
and rap battles.
That's
this
all this
is. A geek battle.
Yep.
Back and forth. Back and top that. I can top that.
This is the drop the mic version. So, oh, 1 terabyte. Oh, that's cute. Yeah.
2 terabyte data traveler. But it is a little pricey.
It's pricey. So what I would say is, I mean, this is bragging rights. That's why I keep it in this really cool case and I don't really use it. It's just something that I can show that, yes, that technology does exist. However, Leo, if people are willing to put a little bit of time into it, they can make their own. That's so much faster than anything they're going to be able to buy.
Minute. Make your own hard drive?
Make
what is this?
Your own. So this is something that I made on KnowHow not too long ago. This is just an enclosure. This is a Sabrent enclosure, and these enclosures will run you about $14 each. And inside is an mSATA drive. Now, these mSATA drives can be incredibly fast. They will go the full speed of the SATA spec, but then I can enclose it in this USB enclosure, which is USB 3, which gives me ridiculous speeds. In fact, we've got a couple of links here for the 500-gigabyte mSATA card, a Samsung, is going to run you about $166. This will give you half a terabyte of storage.
Nice.
And the thing about that is that storage doesn't run at 300 megabytes per second read and 200 megabytes per second write. This is 560 megabytes per second read, 550 megabytes per second write.
That is very high speed. That's like a solid state disk
drive.
This
is a solid
state. As opposed to solid state memory.
Precisely.
NFC memory.
Yeah. I mean, you really do use the full capacity of a USB-C.
That's really nice, yeah.
And the equivalent USB drive, which would be slower, would cost about 40% more. So if you're willing to build your own, you can get this. Now, there's a geek advantage to doing this, Leo, and I know most of our listeners don't care.
Yeah.
But do you remember there was a threat called Bad USB?
Yes.
18 months ago.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And the whole idea was they figured out that the firmware on a USB drive, be it a USB stick or even a USB printer, could be overwritten.
Yes.
And then they could hide something in the storage, some malware payload, and you would never know it's there.
That's why when you see a USB drive on the ground, don't pick it up and stick it in your computer.
Never.
Because it could take over your system.
Precisely. But if you do it this way, if you use this this build your own, the thing is the storage is actually separate from the controller.
Right.
So if I had worries, I could always pull the storage out, plug it straight into an mSATA controller so there's no USB translator.
Oh.
And I could see exactly what's on the drive. That's, again, totally geek. Most of you don't care, but if you did worry about bad USB, this is actually a good solution for
it. Well, now that you've brought that up, the geek battle goes on.
Oh, no.
Plan it this way. By the way, I should mention that Samsung SSD I was talking about is the T5.
Nice.
It's about $400 for a terabyte. For $800, you can get 2 terabytes on that.
Okay. Yeah, no.
This is the solution to bad USB. This is, well, Steve Gibson calls it a USB condom, but I think we probably should call it something else. But
it
this
works.
Is PortaPal. And what this is if you find a USB key on the street or whatever, this isn't going to solve that problem because you wouldn't be able to use the data. But what this does solve is the issue, and it's still a bad USB issue, of charging. So when you're going around and you want to plug your charger, let's say at the airport, they put USB ports.
Never trust those.
Don't trust them, right? You don't know what's going to happen if you plug your phone or your computer into one of those chargers. Unless you have the PortaPal, the USB condom, you plug your phone into that end, you plug this end into, you know, the stranger's USB port, and you're safe. This conducts charging only, no data. So this protects you against bad USB.
Leo, do you remember the days when we were naive and we just thought, hey, look, there's a USB port. I'll get some charge.
I'll plug into it. You can't do that anymore. We, for a while, there it is, PortaPal, and it's only $12.99. So this is a very handy thing. It also has one little feature that I haven't tested. They call it the smart charge chip. If your phone can do quick charging, sometimes this will turn that slow charging port seen into a quick charging port.
Right, right.
I haven't tried it to know enough that that works. I just use it as a...
Well, you disconnect the data pins, and so the chip isn't always trying to renegotiate. It just says, oh, full power.
Full power. Go. I'll use it all.
You get it all.
Oh, you know how it works. Smart. Yeah. Smart man. All right, what else you got? I got a big bag here. I can counter anything.
Well, as long as you're dropping USB condoms on things, well, let's talk about some safe power. Now,
safe
this
power.
This is as simple as it gets.
Bring your own with you.
I actually do have a five-pack of these things because people are always asking for batteries. This is an Anker. This is their PowerCore Mini. These things are $14. You can get them for under $10 each.
I love Anker's stuff.
Oh, they work so well.
They're fantastic.
This is a 3350 milliamp hour capacity. It could do 1 amp charge. This is about as basic as it gets. But what I like about this is I could lose it and not feel too bad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is kind of limited. It could give your iPhone a charge. It could give your Android phone a charge. But this is not going to do much.
See, this one does, this has, let me see here, just real quickly, 10,000 milliamp hours. This is from Alki, which is like Anker, but it's another company that does some very good stuff. I carry this around with me because it does smart charging. It, of course, will charge a variety of devices. It has a nice readout letting you know how much power is left. And with 10,000 milliamp hours, you could charge a lot of things with this one. Well, you probably have even a bigger one.
10,000 milliamp hours, that's not bad, but I kind of like, how about 27,000?
Oh!
Let's go that.
That's another Anker device.
This is an Anker device. Okay.
I walked right into that
one, didn't I? It's not just a big battery, Leo.
There's more?
First of all, let's think about what that kind of capacity means. This could charge your iPhone 7 or 8, depending on which version you have, 13 times. It could charge your OnePlus 7.5 times. It could charge your high-end Chromebook 5 times.
How many milliamp hours? 20?
27,000 milliamp hours. But here's the thing, Leo, and this is why I think you're going to want this. See this USB-C port? This is high power enough to charge a laptop. So this will power your MacBook.
How many watts are coming out of that thing?
This will do 30 watts.
30 watts?
30 watts. So
that's amazing. It will charge a MacBook.
Yeah, so I've got
amazing.
I've got this little Toshiba here.
It would probably charge this.
Yeah, actually, we could plug that in.
It's all right. Do your Toshiba.
Light the power right up.
Anything can power
Plenty of power.
Yeah, let me see if the key, there's a little power. Yep, it's powering it.
It's
look
powering,
at that.
Yeah. And it will charge this Toshiba. It will charge a MacBook. I've tried it with every USB device I have. It does provide full USB-C
30
spec.
Watts is enough for a lot of devices.
Right.
You could even slow charge a ThinkPad with that.
And it also fast charges. If you were to charge a 27 watt hour battery on a regular charger, it would take something like 2 days to go from zero to full. This will do it in just under 4 hours because it will do fast charging to the USB-C port. So this is one of these devices that you could have in your backpack, and it's everything. It will charge your phones. It will charge your tablets. It will fast charge all those devices. Plus, it will provide power for your laptop. It becomes your one-stop shop for power.
I love that. And if you have a briefcase or a purse, you can carry that around.
It's a pound and a half. So it's
heavy.
Yeah, it's a little heavy.
Yeah.
A little heavy. But, I mean, the utility of being able
it's
to
fantastic.
Charge everything yeah. in your bag, that's pretty good.
You know what I like to charge? My speakers. I like Ooh. To be. I like to have portable speakers with me. When we're on the airplane or on a boat or whatever, you could listen with headphones, but I really want to blast everybody out with my movies. What can I do? How can I listen? Whoa, look at the size of those guys.
You know, Leo, I'm glad you asked.
I actually bought the little Fugu because you recommended these.
I did.
I love these.
I love these. They sound very good. They're yeah. light. They last forever on charge.
These are bigger.
These are bigger, and there's a reason for that. That's because you like the Sonos system, right?
I am a big Sonos fan, yeah.
And what's the one thing Sonos does that no other speaker does really well?
Internet radio, and more importantly, I know what you're going for, party mode, where you can yeah. have speakers in every room, and if you've ever tried this with Bluetooth or even Wi-Fi yeah. speakers,
they lag.
If they're out of sync, it sounds like you're in an echo chamber.
Precisely.
You want them to all be precisely synced, then that's one of the, that's like the secret sauce. It's only Sonos can do that.
And Fugu took a look at that, and they said, could we create something similar?
Really?
And they did. They created a pairing mode, and these two speakers are actually linked together, so they sync. I am getting sound out of both of these. I can put them on.
I don't hear any echo, any lag at all. They're exactly the same. Well, let yeah. me walk over here. Let's see. I'm going to turn it up way, way loud.
Oh, that's me. Sorry.
All right, it's way, way loud. I'm over here now. Turn yours way, way loud.
Same sound.
There's no echo. It's perfect. And it sounds good. These sound really good, don't they? They sound fantastic.
They're this phenomenal.
How do you spell Fugu?
F-U-G-O-O, just like the pufferfish that no one should eat.
Don't eat Fugus, either the pufferfish or the speakers. The other thing I like about Fugus is these outer wraps are replaceable.
Yes.
You can get different colors, styles. They really look good. That's a nice one.
Oh, and they've done something very retro. They've given us an audio import. So, you know, if you ever wanted to plug in a 3.5-millimeter jack,
nice.
You could still do that.
Really nice.
Yeah, four drivers. You're talking about 20 watts. That's 93 decibel sound pressure. And the fact that they can be paired, I mean, it puts this on par with speaker systems that cost 2 to 4 times as much.
Nice. That's a great price.
Yeah. And these will go for about $140 if you buy it straight from Fugu.
Very good deal.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have speakers with me, but I do think that when you go back to school, you want to worry about bad guys stealing your stuff.
Oh.
And I know you know what this is, but I want to give this a plug.
I love it.
Yubico, Y-U-B-I-C-O. They make these little keys that plug into the USB ports of your devices. And they work with everything because these keys are, in effect, typewriters. They're mm-hmm. keyboards. So when you plug it in, it'll press the button. And this is the newest YubiKey, the YubiKey 4. This will spit out a one-time code. Every 30 seconds, it changes. And I've paired this with Facebook. I've paired this with LastPass. Many places will support YubiKey as second-factor authentication. This is more secure than having a number texted to you. You just have to put this on your keychain. And now whenever I want to do second factor on many, many places, I just plug the YubiKey 4 in, $40, and it will type a one-time password. I don't have to type it. I don't have to remember it. And it is highly secure. The bad guy can't steal your phone number to get your number. They would actually have to steal your YubiKey. So if you're looking for a way, even a high schooler, to be more secure, and I think actually that's probably a good time to start really thinking yep. about security, YubiKey makes a variety of... I also have the YubiKey Neo on my keychain. That's one with NFC chip in it. And for devices that don't have USB ports like your smartphones, you can tap it to the back of an Android phone, and it will do the same thing. It'll hand off that long, very, very long code.
I mean, well, what's the best password? It's the password that you don't care if anyone else knows.
You don't need to know it.
Right.
So you still have your password. So well, LastPass, for instance, I keep all my passwords in there. I want to keep that very secure. That's a one point of failure. You know, if somebody got my LastPass vault, I'd be dead. Right. So I really want to secure that. So I secure it with a very long 20-character password that only I know. And I can't unlock it without my YubiKey. Sometimes that seems a little inconvenient, but boy, it sure makes you a lot more secure. I thought I'd throw that in.
No, that's nice. I like that. Security is going to be a big thing when you're going away, especially to a college campus. But, you know, Leo, I wanted to include something in back to school that wasn't for the student. These are all gadgets and tools for kids.
Kids, yeah.
What about something for the parents who are trying to do a digital cleanse for their kids.
Oh, a giant router.
A giant router.
Oh, you love this router. I know you do. I've heard you talk about it. This is Synology. We both use the Synology NASes, but they recently started making routers,
too. They did. They started with the 1900 AC. This is the 2600 AC, so it's the newer version. Faster processor, a bit more memory. It does everything you would expect a high-end router to do. So, I mean, you could run this as a NAS. You could plug a hard drive into this and share it with everyone. It's even got a media card reader, so you could go that route. But the reason why I've brought it on for this is not the fact that it's got best-of-class throughput or incredible wireless connectivity. It's the fact that it's really, really parent-friendly. Now, this...
By which you mean dummy-friendly.
Dummy-friendly.
Okay.
Dummy-friendly.
I just wanted to get that clear.
See what you did?
Tyler's looking at his dad saying, dummy, you're a dummy. Actually, Jonathan is very smart. But, Jonathan, you may want this router. I think you might want this router. Yeah. Tyler off, you know...
Exactly.
The internet.
One of the things that parents are starting to realize is I need to keep my kids off the internet so that they're sleeping.
That's the big thing. I'm not so much worried about protecting them against bad sites. I want to be able to say, internet off.
Yeah.
Go to bed.
You know, 2 o'clock in the morning, if you've got to be up at 6.
Do you ever do that, Tyler? You stay up late with your phone and surf the internet and Snapchat?
See, Dad's saying yes.
So this can help stop that?
This can help stop that because they've made the interface so easy. Now, Alex, if you can go to my computer, what we're going to be able to show you is this is what the basic network interface inside this router looks like. But here's the fun part. It shows you all the devices that are connected, and it allows me to do parental control. So let's, for example, Jerry. Jerry, sometimes he stays on a little too long.
He's a bad boy.
He's a bad boy. So what we can do is we can say, hey, you know what? Every day between, say, that time and that time.
Oh, that's nice.
It doesn't work. So his connectivity will be disabled. He can still connect to all the resources inside the network. So he can print.
Okay.
He could say access.
He
could
do homework. He
could do
papers,
homework,
but he can't go out to the outside.
Precisely,
world.
And that's this is one of those things where you can do it by device. It's not the entire router, so the parents can still work just fine.
Right.
But you pick the individual devices that are being used by your kids, and you say you've got a curfew. You're not allowed to use the internet past midnight, all the way up to 6 in the morning.
Very, very nice.
Now, it's not just that, though, Leo, because
There's more.
How much would you expect to pay for it now? What I really like about it is the fact that there's an app. So they've created an app both for Android and iOS that allows me to see at a glance. And let's see if you can get in on this one. I can do all the same things. So I can find individual devices, and then I can ban them. So as a parent, I could say, hey, you know what? I see that you're doing something right now. I'm just going to turn you off. And it is literally that. And I've just knocked that device off the internet. And the other part about this is it also allows you to see at a glance exactly how much data is transiting through my network and which devices are doing all the data transiting. So I can say, hey, wait a minute. This desktop here, I'm pulling down a bit too much to be just email. It's probably connected to Netflix. And I could even break it down further, and I could see where that traffic is going. I could say, hey, there's no reason for you. If you say you're doing homework at 10 o'clock, why are you connected to Amazon Prime Video? And this is the kind of granularity that I love. And the fact that they put it on a smartphone means that parents can sit and just take a quick look and say, nope, you're done.
Can you use your Sonos to disable your son's internet?
I cannot.
No, I'm not your Sonos. You're Echo Home. Can you use your Amazon Echo to disable your son's internet?
I cannot.
You don't have a son, so that's really
the point
is moot. But I can. I can say, Echo, pause Michael's internet. And that's because we use Eero's, okay?
That's pretty cool.
And Eero's is a sponsor. I'm going to show you the Eero interface. The other thing I can do, because you assign everything that's on the Eero, all the devices on the Eero, the other thing I can do is I can actually look at Michael's profile. I can see what devices are on it. I can set scheduled pauses. Or if I decide, hey, it's time for Michael to get off the internet, Michael, I'm sorry. Fortunately, this iPad's not on the internet, but that would pause his internet even if I'm not home. That's a nice feature. This is something new that Eero has just added called Eero Plus to their... They've always had this pause the internet, but they've added these safe filters to the new Eero Plus. I don't know why this iPad's not on the air, but that's really a nice feature, the ability to pause somebody remotely. And of course, I've assigned every device in the house to either me, to Lisa, or to Michael, our 14-year-old. And I can even have different profiles for what's blocked and what's not blocked per device and per person. This is the new Eero Plus. And I have to say, I think they've done a very nice job with setting it up. So Synology is not the only company that has access control.
Eero, Synology, Asus.
A lot of them will do this. But I have to say, I'm very impressed with what Eero has done, especially just being able to say Echo, pause Michael. Now, you might say, that wouldn't Michael just say Echo, unpause Michael? But no, it only pauses. You have to go into the app to unpause.
There we go.
Okay.
There we go.
Michael, I'm sorry I paused you. Let me just unpause you right now. I love it that I can do this even when I'm away from home.
And I love it that these tech companies are finally realizing.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Give the parents some control so that they can be parents.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm with you. I'm not for blocking sites or anything because I think that's something you got to teach to your kids.
Right.
But the internet can be addicting, and I've done it where I've gone
staying
down a click hole at 2
in
the morning.
It's a big issue.
It's horrible. I mean, and next thing you know, you've got 3 hours sleep for a long day. So this
yeah,
would
Michael
be the way
will
to
do that. He will, and it's not his fault. I don't blame him.
He's got a curious mind,
and it's we've all done it. Once you, a click hole is a good way to describe it. Once you start clicking, you can't stop. Well, wow. We just who won this geek battle?
I'll give it to you.
No, I think Father Robert, in every respect, you topped me each and every time.
You had the Eero.
We're going to do this more often, though. I like this one. This is good. A bunch of stuff that might be useful for your back to school kid and for you as a parent, because parents have to go back to school.
We say back to school for your kids, but these are really all for you. You know that.
They're
right?
all toys.
Right.
Thank you, Robert. Really great stuff. Really a lot of fun. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to do a call for help. We're going to find out if we can help Suhail and his family in India. But first, I want to talk a little bit about WordPress. Oh, I love WordPress. I've been using WordPress as a blogging host for many years. In fact, 28% of the internet uses WordPress because it's been around for a long time. It's mature. It's well supported. In fact, one of the things I like about using WordPress is there's lots of utilities that use the WordPress API. It's such a standard API. It's very easy to bring stuff into WordPress, to connect to WordPress. I often will blog from a WordPress, an app that supports WordPress on my desktop, on my tablet, on my phone. And of course, WordPress.com is WordPress as it should be. I used to self-host WordPress, and of course you can still do that, but it's so nice to have them hosted. First of all, they do it very affordably. They even have a free tier. They keep it all up to date, all patched. They have plugins galore. Every plugin that you can run on your own WordPress site, you can run at WordPress.com. And more importantly than all of that, there is a community around it. Millions of people use WordPress.com. So you can have, when you first set up your WordPress.com site, a follow button that lets people follow you. They'll help promote your site. If you're a business and you don't have a website, it's so important that you get on the internet. I know people say, well, no, I have a Facebook page or I have a Twitter account. That's fine. That's great. You should keep doing that. But you don't control that. The only way to have a place on the internet that you control, that you guarantee is going to be running, and I can tell you so many businesses who lost their Facebook account for dumb reasons, not because they did anything, sometimes just a mistake, and that takes you offline. If you have your own website, you've always got it, and that's why you got to go to WordPress.com/NSS and set up a business site at WordPress.com. I have a business site. I love it. If you go to LeoLaporte.com, that's my WordPress site. And of course, it still supports your Facebook and your Twitter. You can post to Facebook and Twitter. It will go into your website. I love that. I do that on my site. People who are reading your content on your website can then link to you on Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus and lots of other places. That social sharing is a huge way. There's my website to generate more traffic. I'm a big fan. Yeah, scroll up. You can see all of that stuff. It looks like I ought to post. I got to get another post up there. I want you to try it. In fact, we're going to get you a great deal. 15% off any new plan purchase if you go to WordPress.com/NSS. Friendly support, a great community, software that always runs right and is always secure. And it's easy to use. You don't have to be a web guru. In fact, you don't have to know anything about the web. They don't expect that. If you're a restaurateur, you know, you say, well, I know how to use Instagram or I know how to use Facebook. I don't want to do a website. No. It's easier. It's easier. And that way you always have a place on the internet that you call your own. WordPress.com/NSS. Save 15% on your brand new site right now. Are you ready? I think it's, let me just check. I think it's time. Am I right? No? What?
Time for some cleansing.
I got these all out of order. Megan Maroney. Are you an app rat?
Unfortunately, yes.
I am an app rat. That means what? We have lots of apps on our phone?
No, I think lots of apps are dozens of apps. Hundreds of apps, that's an app rat. That's
190.
Oh, my
190.
Goodness.
Do I use them all? No. Do they take up space? Yes. Do they use up battery? Yes. It's time for part three of our digital cleanse. Megan Maroney, she's going to fix the app rat.
Welcome to week three of the TWiT Digital Cleanse. We've managed our notifications and tackled our inboxes. And this week, we're going to clean up our apps. If you missed the last two episodes, subscribe to the new screensavers at twit.tv/TNSS. Thank you to everyone who has emailed me or tweeted at #DigitalCleanse. Keep the feedback coming. We are in this together, my friends. This week's Digital Cleanse goes out to Matthew in Atlanta, who sent me a photo of his pristine desktop. Matt writes, I habitually keep my startup items and icons to a bare minimum, and I set the icons to a small size. I also like to keep the system tray as uncluttered as possible. Frequently used programs are on the taskbar. Everything else is accessible by typing in the name of the program in the start menu search field. Now, there is a reason it's calming to look at a clean desktop. There's plenty of research that shows that clutter is distracting and time-consuming and even psychologically painful. Getting rid of clutter can also be painful. Researchers at Yale have seen pain responses in the anterior cingulate cortex and the insula of your brain when you have to give something up, like an old sweater you never wear but might someday wear again, or an old app that you never use but someday might use again. My computer desktop and my phone home screen are both cluttered with apps. I tell you that so that you know that I need this digital cleanse as much as you do. Let's start with your iPhone. Apple won't let you put apps on your iOS home screen wherever you want. This can be frustrating, but it can also automatically prevent some clutter. Here's what else you can do to cleanse your home screen. Step one, remove any app from your iPhone home screen that you don't use regularly. Since iOS 10, Apple has allowed you to remove tips and the stock apps and other apps you probably never use. Long press and delete those right away. Step two, think seriously about folders. They might make you feel like you're more organized, but for me, it just means an extra tap to get to the app that I need. Put your four most used apps in your iPhone dock. Then put only your most used apps on your iPhone home screen. Reserve a backwards L in the bottom right quadrant for your next most frequently used apps, since those are in prime thumb range. Of course, it makes sense to put some apps in folders, like apps that only your kids use, or travel apps, or other programs that you don't use regularly. Or maybe you want that extra tap in the case of social media apps or Candy Crush or other addictive apps. That extra step might make you decide you could do something else with your time. And that brings me to step three. Delete those apps that waste your time. Step one was removing distracting notifications. In response to that, Tom emailed me to say, the main thing I do to stay focused is to keep Facebook and Twitter on my computers and to keep them off my phone. I also got a tweet from Bob with a video of him removing the Facebook and the Messenger app from his phone. Way to go, Bob. I know it's tough, but remember, you agreed to this and just think we could be doing an actual physical cleanse where we'd be giving up coffee instead of our Facebook app. You don't want to do that, do you? No, I know you do not. Now to cleaning up our Android apps. Android allows you a lot more customization with your home screen, which means it can get messy fast if you're not paying attention. Android expert Jason Howell recommends using a launcher like Nova Launcher. Nova Launcher is free, and it lets you design your home screen in a way that works best for you. It lets you put any widget in your dock or customize your app drawer. Nova Launcher Prime costs $4.99 and lets you really clean things up by hiding apps and some other features. Our final step today is to clean the apps off of your PC or Mac desktop. Let's start with PC. I recommend hiding everything away in a folder somewhere. As viewer Matthew from Atlanta says, everything is accessible by typing in the name of the program in the start menu search field. The same goes for the Mac. If you need a file, search for it. The keyboard shortcut is Command Spacebar. To quickly get to the desktop on my Mac, I use the Command plus Mission Control keyboard shortcut. Then get rid of everything you can. If your files are really out of control, you might want to invest in a $10 app called Folder Tidy. If you still want to keep icons on your Mac desktop, at least tidy them up a bit. To do that, right-click on any empty space on the screen and then choose Clean Up or Clean Up By. And speaking of Mission Control, let's go ahead and keep that tidy too. Quit some of those programs. And that's it for our cleanse this week. I don't know about you, but I am feeling more like my best self every day. I am Megan Maroney, and I host iOS Today every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific. Don't forget to join me in our cleanse by using the hashtag #DigitalCleanse on Twitter or on YouTube.
I hate her. I just hate her. She's so perfect.
She's got everything clean.
I hate her.
You know, the thing that bothers me is in the Android app ecosystem, you can remove them from your phone, but they stay in the library.
I kind of like that.
But you have to remove them one by one from the library. There's nothing like click these 40 and get rid of them. And it's every app you've ever installed, ever.
It's kind of fun to go back and look at the beginning, but a lot of those apps are terrible. Like, you don't ever want to bring back those apps.
The first 60 apps I ever downloaded to my phone, they were all wallpaper, Android wallpaper.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can. That actually is a good tip. I didn't know for a long time that you could. You can make an X show up if you edit, and you can delete them, and then you'll never see them again. But it's one by one. If you have,
Google,
hundreds of apps,
fix that, please.
Yeah, it'd be nice to just say delete all that.
Thanks.
I don't want to remember any of that. All right, thank you, Megan Maroney. Part four of her digital cleanse is next week. What's she going to do? We don't know. No one knows. It'll make us feel guilty and bad, no matter what.
Two words. App enema.
Two words I wish you hadn't said. Time for a call for help! Suhail is on the line from Chicago. Hello, Suhail.
Hey, Leo. Hey, Father Robert. I'm still reeling from the app enema thing that you just said. So. And he just cut straight to me, so I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
As enemas often do.
Yeah.
I can imagine,
All right. So what can we do for you, Suhail?
All right. So my folks, they're back in India. By the way, I used to be a huge fan of like the original screensavers on TechTV.
Thank you.
So it's like a big moment to be able to talk to you. Anyway, so my folks are retired. They built this very nice house down in the southern state of India in Kerala. And the way we construct houses in India is we tend to do like reinforced concrete all throughout the house, no drywall.
Right.
Just, you know, every individual room. So right when we were planning the house out, I made sure we wired the entire house.
Oh, very smart.
Right. So because this is over three floors and there's like four bedrooms.
And once you build a concrete house, you really can't get back into the wall.
That's it.
That's it. So did you put conduit in there?
There's a conduit. There was a separate conduit for telephone and gas.
Well done, smart.
So I just made sure that that's in the walls. So all of the bedrooms have their own like jacks. There's, I think, total of 8 Ethernet jacks now going into a gigabit switch. Also all set up. The problem is I didn't really put in a budget for access points. So I just sort of reused all the routers that have piled up over the years in my house. And I basically, they're all like wireless N routers that have their routing functionality disabled and just set to AP mode with the same SSID, the same security settings. So theoretically, my devices do hop between APs, but that handoff is not clear.
No, because it's not designed for that. What's really happening is you walk into another room and your device says, oh, I see a stronger signal.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. It has the same name and same password, but it sees it as a completely different device. So there isn't a handoff at all. It's just losing connection to one Wi-Fi device and connecting to a new one.
And
as you're experiencing, it's imperfect. I mean, I've done it, but it's imperfect.
Yeah. Right. So and the worst case scenario actually is my I stay in touch with my folks on Skype or WhatsApp video calling.
Oh, and they walk across
something around the house.
Yeah.
And then I obviously lose them all
each time. Right? You're going to lose them. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I was wondering, like, what solutions might be there? There's the, you know, there's the easy to use solution that will be easy to maintain for my parents because I'm not around. And then also there might possibly be a geeky solution for somebody who's willing, like me, to, you know, go in and try to install custom firmware or do DDWRT. So I don't know what the best case is if you want to try to have a seamless Wi-Fi network.
The reason this is a problem is because when you change to another router, you're going to redo the DHCP.
Right.
You might even get a new IP address. This whole thing is going to be a slow process. Would it be possible to have one router? I'm asking Father Robert here. He's kind of a networking guru. That would be the DHCP router. And then tell all the other routers, you're not a router. You're an extender.
Yeah, well, he's got the other routers in AP mode, so yep. It will do that to a certain extent.
Well, AP means access point.
Right.
That means each one is going to do DHCP, right?
Oh, no. The DHCP
they're bridging.
Right. Okay. They're just bridging.
Now, but they're not doing a handoff. Well, that's good. At least they're not doing DHCP.
Yeah, unfortunately,
right. Not a single DHCP server, yeah.
Yeah. Most of the systems that will do this properly are probably going to be out of the budget that you're thinking.
Well, that's what the mesh system is designed for. That's why they call them mesh systems. So
Ubiquiti does it well. Ruckus does it well. Eero does it well. But
there are a couple of mesh systems that are do support plugging an Ethernet jack into them.
Mm-hmm.
So what's nice about that, Eero does this. I use Plume. They're really designed for this. What's nice about that is they're getting a full speed backhaul. Mm. But because it's mesh, that's what mesh does, is handoff. That's
right.
Really kind of almost the definition of mesh, is that you're on a single network, a meshed network. And so if you move from room to room, it doesn't seem like it's much of a change from the point of view of the device. I would look at the Plumes. Now, this is not cheap.
Yeah.
You're replacing what you've got. The Plumes are $49 each. The idea is you put them in the room you want access to, and every room you want access to, including halls. Each Plume has an Ethernet jack. There'll be one Plume that's the main router. The rest will be attached to that. But if you happen to have Ethernet in that room, you plug it into that Plume. So it doesn't, now it's using not Wi-Fi, but a hardwired backhaul. That's actually ideal. That means it's got full speed in each room, but because it's mesh, you're still Wi-Fi. When you're moving around, you don't have any handoff, or rather any renegotiation. It just hands you off.
Right.
Of all the choices, this is probably the least expensive because you can buy individual Plumes for $49. So that means if you only had three rooms, it's half the price of an Eero system. Eero does the same thing, but it starts at $300.
Right.
We should mention Eero's a sponsor. We like Eero a lot. I use, ironically, both Eero and Plume at home. I use both.
And that solution will work absolutely, 100%.
It's expensive.
If you're looking at something that's a little less expensive, maybe using the existing hardware, and assuming that at least a few of the routers that you're currently using as APs can run DDWRT, what you can do is you can set up WDS, which is a wireless distribution system.
That turns them into extensors.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have a centralized router that's really controlling the handoff. Now, unfortunately, DDWRT works really, really well. I don't know how useful it's going to be if you don't have hands on the hardware, because every once in a while it is going to hiccup. If they don't support DDWRT, and if you cannot buy new hardware, because the hardware that Leo is suggesting would absolutely do it, the cheapest way to do this is to do a graceful handoff. One of the issues that we have, especially in houses that have solid core, so the wireless signal, it degrades very quickly, is the power's turned up way too much. We like turning up the power on the AP, but that doesn't turn up the power in the client. What you can do is actually jump into the settings and drop the output for the radio to as low as it will get.
Oh, interesting.
And what you're actually doing is, you're shrinking the range, but because you've got so many, it will more gracefully hand off from AP to AP
that's
to
funny,
AP.
Because that's kind of how Plume works. It's using 5 gigahertz. It doesn't want you to see any other access
Precisely.
Point, just the one you're proximate to.
Right.
So by turning down the power on all of them?
On all of them. Yeah, so it takes a little tuning. So you're going to have to find that sweet spot. But what you really want is you want the client to have no chance of connecting to anything else. You want it to say, oh, there's only one signal I can connect
That's part of the problem is as you leave one room and go to another, it still sees the old one. It's trying to decide
and
which
maybe
one
other, maybe two others. Yeah, exactly. And that bit of interference, that is actually one of the main causes of that drop-off. Not necessarily the connection time, but the fact that the client, depending on how sophisticated it is, needs that time to decide, well, which one am I going to connect to? If you turn it down enough so that you still have coverage, but it's not blasting the radios through the walls, you actually will get much better handoff time.
What if do you not want to spend any money, Suhail?
No, I mean, I just wanted to see what options were there. So, I mean, I didn't know the plumes were available on a like device by device basis. So that
Normally you buy a 3-pack or a 6-pack, but you can spend it by individuals.
I just need to make sure it works on 220 volts. That's all.
I'm pretty sure it does. Yes. But that's, of course, an issue. Yes. That's the other thing you might want to look at is power line networking.
Yes.
So I use, and these are pretty cheap. TP-Link makes very inexpensive power line networking units. Mm. And in effect, that's still one network. What you want it to be is one network, right? And the power line networking will allow you to put a Wi-Fi adapter in whatever rooms you want Wi-Fi. The thing is, you've already got Ethernet. So it's kind of like a dumb thing to do. Maybe, I bet you, TP-Link does make one that you could connect. You know what? I bet you, TP-Link is exactly the kind of thing they might do. Mm. So you want, in effect, what's like their power line networking device, but instead it's plugged into the Ethernet because you don't need to carry. And it's a single Wi-Fi network. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things TP-Link does. When I had the power line networking, I'd go into the settings of each thing and say, no, you're all part of one network. And that worked really well. There was no handoff. Mm-hmm. It was one password, one AP, one SSID. Maybe that's the way to look at it. Look and see what TP-Link has along those lines.
There is one other bulletproof option that I can give you, and it is actually incredibly inexpensive.
Ooh.
What you want is to find a 100-meter roll of Category 5 cable and then just have them drag it through the house.
Always be attached.
Always be connected.
Sure. Always
great
be connected.
Great throughput.
Yeah.
So your call. You have options. It all depends on how much you want to spend versus how much you want to administer this versus how much you're willing to tinker.
The plume is pretty cool because it looks good, and it's very easy to install. Your parents could do it. They just plug in, they've got the Ethernet jack. They plug into the wall and plug the Ethernet into that. And if it's only a handful of rooms, you see how cute they are? And they have three different colors. Through an artifact of how Comcast works, our local cable company, I have two Comcast connections, a business class and a home.
Of course, yeah.
I tried to cancel the home, and they said, well, if you cancel the home. Anyway, it's a long story. I don't want to do that. But we have two networks, so I'm using Plume and Eero. They coexist, which I thought would be a real problem because they're all in the same frequencies. And the Plume is – I use the Plume for – it's my Internet of Things network. So I can put plumes near the cameras, near the doorbell, and that way I get distributed Wi-Fi, and it doesn't really interfere with other stuff. And the plume, because it's all, it tends to use 5 gigahertz, doesn't get in the way of other things. So I'm really happy with the plume, particularly for that use. I think your parents would like it a lot.
And it's super, it's dead simple.
It is as easy as
really
can be.
Nice. Yeah. If there's any trouble, you tell them, pull it out from the wall and put it back in.
Yep.
That's a good point.
Sounds perfect,
Which DDWRT would not be quite.
No, absolutely not,
I should show you my, one of the other things you can do with Plume I can show you is you can see your, this, much like the Eero, you can see your topology.
Oh, no, he's going to shut off Michael's Wi-Fi again.
I'm actually, this is our network at home, and if I tap it, I can show you. It's a crazy-ass topology. I mean, it's
nice.
Yeah. But you can see what they do is they're doing handoffs. So the main router is connected to the kitchen, which then connects to the entry hall, which then connects to the garage. You can tap it and see, good signal. What devices are connected? You see it's connected to my exterior Nest cameras. That's why it's in the garage, right? And so that's kind of cool. You see all these little arrows going around. Those are showing what devices are connected. And you can see this in Chicago.
Yes.
Seriously, so this is a network at my house. This is over the internet, the public internet. So you can tell what's going on with your parents.
That makes it worth it because your parents call you and they say the internet's not working. You bring this up and you know exactly what's busted.
And I know what's connected to it and I can see which ones have good signals. It helps you a little bit planet, you could say, Mom, you need to move the Eero number 4 into the, you know, into the mast. Look, I have an Eero in my, a plume in my closet. Has an excellent signal. Nothing's connected to it. So there you go.
I don't want to know why.
You don't want to know why.
That's hilarious.
I charge my phones in there.
Have like some kind of IoT device in your closet that keeps track of your clothes
This is, I put all the Amazon Echoes on here because you do want to have a separate network if you can. If you have the luxury of doing that, you want to at least isolate the IoT devices. Right. So all the IoT devices are on the plug.
People don't realize really well. That Leo has internet-connected pants.
Well, there's my oven. My June oven is connected to the Eero in the kitchen. See? Oh. See? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wait, can you turn on your oven from here?
Yeah. Don't I can oh, worse
that's ooh.
I can see what people are cooking from here.
That's a scary peek into a future that I don't want to be part of, you know.
Things to remember if you're ever asked to house sit at Leo's. Yeah, he can see everything.
I get a video. I can't do it right now. I can do it on the other phone. This isn't logged into my Gina account. I get a video of what was cooked in the oven last, a time-lapse video.
Why aren't you tweeting this stuff out?
I should
pay attention to that.
Yeah, what's cooking in Leo's oven right now?
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you see a hand go in and out. It's anyway, that's really probably not where you want to go with that. Hey, Suhail, great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're
thank
a nice you. Son. You're doing a good thing for your parents.
Thank you.
Yeah, take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Coming up next week, Roberto Baldwin, for the first time Ooh. Ever, is going to host the show. Now, Roberto works today at Engadget. He's really an expert at that stuff. But in his earlier in his journalistic career, he worked for TMZ. So expect some great but out-of-date Hollywood gossip. If you have a question about celebrities or gadgets for Roberto, here's how you ask.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
We also have an internet-connected toilet, but I'll save that for another.
No, I didn't need to know that.
I'm kidding.
And actually, no.
I wish I were.
You do. You have the Toto, right?
Yeah, it's a Toto.
Yeah, that's connected.
We've been waiting for a long time for the Tango, Project Tango.
Oh, yes.
This is Google's augmented reality solution, which actually, according to experts, is very good. It's HoloLens capability, maybe even a little bit better than what Apple's mm-hmm. proposing. But until now, there's been really no way for you to try it at home. That's until Asus released its Zenfone AR. Of course, Jason Howell had to have one, and here's his review.
Project Tango, that's Google's AR hardware effort, has had a few years of development now, and we have, right here, a very consumer-friendly phone packing that hardware. But is it enough? Let's check it out. This is the Asus Zenfone AR, AR for augmented reality, because of the Project Tango hardware that you find in the back here. $599 for 64 gigs of storage, 6 gigs of RAM. $699 for 128 gigs of storage and 8 gigs of RAM. You've got a 5.7-inch WQHD Super AMOLED display, Snapdragon 821 processor, which is last year's processor, but they say it's optimized for Tango. And with a lot of memory, that's going to help with the Tango performance. Critical to this is the Asus Tri-Cam system, a 23-megapixel f2.0 camera, also a motion tracking camera with a fisheye lens, and depth sensing camera with IR. That's what's doing all the work to do the positional tracking that Project Tango requires. You've also got a 3,300 milliamp hour battery with quick charge, Android 7.0 Nougat on board. This is the first device with Tango and Daydream. Looking at the design, I mean, this is the first Project Tango phone for sure that feels like an everyday phone. It's pretty thin. It's pretty light. It really has kind of like a nice soft touch faux leather backing, aluminum edges on the side. And one thing that really bothers me is this like shiny Asus logo up there at the very top. It really screams out to you. But overall, not a bad design. It really feels like just a normal everyday phone. Nothing to knock on the display. The Super AMOLED panel is very nice. It's sharp. It's bright when it needs to be. The cameras themselves on the back, when you're just using it as a normal camera, totally capable of wonderfully detailed shots. And I have a few pictures of those here. Lots of extra modes in there as well, like beauty shots, HDR plus, miniatures. And yes, because you've got multiple cameras here, you've got depth of field effects that you can do. Although some of those images blurred nicely around the edges, some of them not so much. So to each their own. Tango is really the critical part of this. And the what's holding it back is the fact that there's only 35 or so Tango apps to date. Not very much. And it's neat at first to interact with augmented reality in your space. You can kind of take the space out in front of you and throw a tower there, for example, and kind of get up close to it or put furniture in the corner. But honestly, the effect kind of tires quickly. You only really want to be holding the phone out, walking around, looking at things for so long before you get tired and a little bored. I'll be doing a small roundup of some of the neater Tango apps on next week's show. And things do run a little hot when that's happening. Same goes for Daydream support, which this phone has as well. So overall, the phone itself is fine. It's not necessarily spectacular, but I'd say fine for the price. The big selling point is Tango, which feels mostly kind of like a tech demo more than anything else at this point. Not only that, ARKit is going to enable almost the same level of tracking on nearly all modern iPhones when it launches later this year. Developer support for ARKit almost assured. I'll hope to see Tango get more steam, but something tells me we'll be waiting a while for that to happen. ASUS ZenFone AR is fine if you want something a little different, but don't expect much in the short term. It's just a phone with a cool extra feature. My name's Jason Howell, and you can catch me talking Android on All About Android every Tuesday here on twit.tv.
See, that's a little disappointing. And it's really Google's disadvantage where Apple has an advantage. Yeah. Because there's so many Android manufacturers, and Google can't really dictate to them, oh, well, you got to build in Tango hardware.
You need that uniform experience before you actually pull developers in. Because the developer's not going to say, oh, yeah, I want to develop just for Tango on an ASUS phone.
Right. Or it's just not going to happen.
No.
Yeah. It's too bad. So you didn't believe me, but this is my my internet-connected oven. I could preheat it from here.
Leo literally has video of everything that's ever been cooked
in the last time we made toast. There you go. And the nice thing, I don't know how many ovens ask you to rate your cooking experience after the fact. The June oven does, yeah. It was August 23rd at 7:20 a.m. Took us 11 minutes to
make. I'm serious. You should tweet these out. This would be fascinating to see how much toast is eaten in the LaPorte household.
Notice, by the way, we have this very fancy oven. All we ever do is make toast. It's a lot of toast in this oven. Toast, toast. A lot of just nothing but toast.
You know, they have toasters.
I know.
They're really inexpensive.
They're not internet-connected toasters. They don't give you a video of your toast cooking, so there's nothing, absolutely nothing in the oven right now.
I think someone was just cold.
They were just heating up the house.
They're just heating up the house.
Oh, we're making garlic bread. That's a kind of toast. Oops, it's gone.
So it's basically a bread oven.
It's a bread oven. Not even a baking oven. Just a bread oven. Oh, I have too many things. I got to do a digital cleanse. It is time, Mr. Father. You don't say. Do you say the Right Reverend Father Robert?
The Right Reverend? That's not Episcopal's. A Catholic thing. That's definitely not a Catholic thing.
You're just a father.
I'm that guy. We're really kind of low-key.
Did they ever call you Daddy? Never mind, I shouldn't ask.
Only
that.
On Fridays.
It's time for the mailbag. I always look forward to the mailbag segment.
Weren't we going to automate this thing?
No, I like it this way. This is better. Let's see what's in the mailbag today. Oh, a ZDTV yo-yo.
Oh, this is a collectible.
Amaze yourself. Jerry, is that yours?
Yep.
Every once in a while, we find old ZDTV memorabilia. I don't know what we're going to do.
I have a ZDTV watch.
Do you really?
They were giving away ZDTV watches to like the first 100 people at Comdex.
CES.
No. This was... Oh, no, it was Comdex.
Comdex. Yeah.
It was Comdex. And
yeah.
I have an anniversary edition watch.
Aw. You're a lucky fella. Pick an email envelope here.
All right,
I'm going to start on this one. It's a video question from Ron in Glastonbury, Connecticut.
My call for help is I'm currently in the market for a new monitor that will support USB Type-C and HDMI without any sort of needs for dongles. Now, I have a brand new laptop, a MacBook Pro, which supports USB Type-C, has 4 ports, and the HDMI is for my Xbox One. It would be nice if the resolution is a minimum of 4K. The budget that I have as a maximum is $1,500. And then as another feature that would be nice to have on a monitor is that you can watch... say, for example, have Netflix on the Xbox and also display output from the MacBook at the same time, you know, as I'm doing work. The current setup here is I have my television. It's old. It cranks out a lot of heat, enough to warm up a small room during the winter time here on the East Coast. This monitor right here that's on the Apple Store does not support HDMI. Otherwise, I may have purchased that. Here's my MacBook Pro, which has four USB Type-C. And for no reason, just to show it off, I suppose, here's my 20-year-old iPhone from circa 1997. So, still works. All right. Again, thank you very much. I'm looking at, say, 4K resolution, $1,500, USB Type-C and HDMI inputs. And also, if you could support simultaneous displaying of the Xbox and a laptop. Thank you very much for
Thanks, help. Ron. Ron, Glastonbury, Connecticut. We think we found it for you. Either that or Father Roberts decided he's shy. What is this? Is the Dell? We actually bought this. I bought this. I thought this would be
this
really
is yours,
cool,
Leo.
And I deeply regret it at this point. But it might. But it's exactly what Ron's looking for. This is 43 inches. You're right, Ron. Generally, you don't want a television set, because a TV set comes with a lot more stuff, tuners and a lot of other things, smart software. A monitor is just the panel. This is a Dell. It's very nice. It's Ultra HD, 4K. In fact, because it's 4K, it's actually four 1080p screens. And one of the things you can do with this Dell is you can have four different screens. So you could have a 1080p Xbox, you could have your television set, you could have your computer, you could have your iPhone, you could have all four screens going at once. That's why I thought this is very cool. Or you can do as Robert does, which is use the whole screen as one giant 4K screen. Now, Robert,
it is
what kind of connectors does that have in the back?
Now, it does not have USB-C. However, it does do both DisplayPort and mini DisplayPort, which USB-C will do alternate
Absolutely.
Mode into.
Yeah.
It also does two HDMI. And like you said, this is actually four 1080p screens. So if you wanted to run two laptops, the Xbox, and maybe your cable box, that's perfectly fine. It works perfectly. And it also does audio out, so it will route all your audio to your stereo
and you,
system.
And the remote control lets you decide how this is laid out.
Precisely.
You could have one screen on one side and a little inset. There's all sorts of ways you can mix and match. This is actually a pretty good monitor. Get ready, though. You might look at this and say, 43-inch monitor, all these capabilities. That's going to cost $5,000. $897.
Yep. It's gone under way down. When we bought this for you, because we thought this was going to be on your set, it was $1,400 or $1,500.
I thought that was a good deal.
That was a good, yeah, and they've gone so far down. And I have to say, because I do have a 43-inch TV that I'm using as a monitor at home, I am really close to pulling the trigger on getting one of these.
As
because
a TV.
The quality is so yeah. much better. I mean, if you're sitting at your desk the whole day, you owe your eyes to have some decent technology, and this one is really, really nice.
A television set's never going to display text as well as a monitor. That's
yeah.
number one. So if you're ever going to put a computer screen on this, you really do need something like this. Dell is amazing. They really are the low-price leaders. Make great monitors for very fair price. This is a great monitor. And it's actually sitting on Father Robert's desk with two other monitors, as if he didn't have enough display.
You know, we had monitors. It's one of the things we've got here at Twit. A lot of monitors.
A lot of monitors.
But no, but this is by far the nicest monitor I've ever looked at for
really?
A long period of time.
All right.
Yeah,
nice.
The quality is phenomenal. And it does matte, which is, I love
it's
the fact.
It's not a glary
it's
glossy
It's not
screen.
The super glary, yeah. glossy reflection yeah. demon. So, yeah, if I was going to spend my own money to buy a 43-inch monitor, this is the one that it would be.
The only question mark for me would be gaming on it, because you said you wanted to put your Xbox on it. I'm not sure what the latency is, but modern LCDs are pretty good. I'm sure it's
yeah.
much less than 9 milliseconds.
This does, I think, like 5 milliseconds.
Yeah,
so
that's good enough for that. Yeah. And you see, this is the intent, I think, was really for traders, and people would have multiple monitors on their screen instead of having four different 1080p monitors you have. One monitor. That, look how big that is. She's way too close, by the way. You can't.
You know, it's funny how many times people visit the studio and they see me working there, and the first reaction is it's comically like, oh my gosh, that's
yeah.
way too big.
Yeah.
And then after watching it for a few minutes, they always ask, how much is one of these things?
Yeah.
Because they love it. They, yeah. I mean, it just looks really, really good. And the fact that I can hook up four devices.
That's pretty cool.
And literally have four TVs.
With no bezels.
With no bezels.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
The dull, not so dull, the Ultra, dull. The Dell Ultra 43 Ultra HD 4K multi-client monitor. That's what they call it. And yeah, there aren't very many monitors with Type-C in.
Oh.
They expect you to get an adapter to plug in your Type-C connector.
But, I mean, Type-C, if you're hooking it up to a monitor, it's actually DisplayPort alternate
right.
mode.
It's so just DisplayPort it's just through DisplayPort. A Type-C, yeah. C connector. Yeah. You've got one.
I do, and I've got one from Bill in Fullerton, California.
Hello, Bill.
He wants to know, I'd like to replace the hard drive on my dual boot Win 7 and Ubuntu 16 Dell Inspiron laptop with an SSD using a SATA to USB cable. My hope is to simply clone the drive, swap them out, boot up, and all is good. Any suggestions for free, relatively, and simple cloning software? Thanks for your help, Bill from Fullerton.
Okay.
Now, there are plenty of tools that he should have, like DiskPart, which is free.
Well, and I should point out, everybody who makes hard drives offers as a download. They used to bundle it, but offers as a download disk cloning software for precisely this reason.
Precisely. However, what I would suggest is, if he's going to get an SSD, why not just get the kit that actually has the cloning bundle?
It does it all in there.
It does it all in here. So this is people who have watched Know How. They know that I'm a big fan of Kingston products. This is the top of the line SSD. This is the one that will do close to 600 megabytes per second read and write.
This is the Hyper
X. And it's evidently it's packaged in adamantium plastic. I can't actually.
This is how dedicated Robert is. He's actually opening a brand new. That's the approved system for opening
that. This is the Catholic system. Yeah. So inside here,
he's not allowed sharp knives.
No, not anymore. Not since the incident.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got the Savage SSD, and of course that's crazy
pretty
fast.
Looking.
And if you are updating an old laptop, I have to say there is no upgrade that approaches the ROI of an SSD.
Absolutely.
I mean, not memory, not CPU, not anything. It's the SSD because it's a drop-in replacement, and you can go from 60 megabytes per second read, 50 megabytes per second write, to 600 megabytes per second read, 570 megabytes per second write. It is a phenomenal boost in performance.
So we should point out, this is exactly the same form factor as your laptop, 2.5-inch hard drive, including the connectors and all of that. So that is a simple thing. But if you wanted to transfer the stuff over beforehand.
Precisely, which is why I would suggest the kit. Most of the time when people buy, they'll buy one of the OEM kits, which just
like
has the drive.
Yeah.
However, if you buy the upgrade kit. It
comes with an external enclosure.
And that's USB 3. So that's
fantastic.
Crazy fast. And it also comes with this. I can't show you this part.
That's the serial number.
But it's the serial number. It comes with the software, Acronis, that you would need to image.
So instead of just using some kind of white-labeled thing that the manufacturer provided, you're using actually a brand-name product.
Precisely, and it's included in the kit.
It's really great.
In the kit.
So this just pops open, and you put the drive in here?
So
is it tool-less?
It's absolutely tool-less. And they do give you
I like that.
They give you a tool here in case you need to open up your case, but once you've got this open like so, you just slide it in. And the nice thing
couldn't be easier.
When you're done, you can take your old hard drive, drop it in there, and now you have an external hard drive.
Oh, I love this. How much more does this cost?
That adds like $10 to the price of the OEM. So there's really no reason not to
getting
get the
this.
Kit.
Yeah. I love it that it includes the USB. So now this is, in effect, an external USB drive. You can use cloning software they provide, in this case, a very good third-party program from Acronis, and make this look like your internal drive. You pop it out of the enclosure, put it in the laptop. Take the internal drive, put it in here. Now you've got a nice little external drive.
Exactly. And that's the software that I've been using for the last couple of years.
That is brilliant of them to do that. That's great. This is the HyperX Savage from Kingston.
Right. Now, I'm using Kingston, but I have to say most of the big manufacturers have something similar. Samsung will do this.
Oh, okay.
I still wouldn't trust OCZ. But Samsung or Kingston, I'm absolutely down with it.
And what I was going to recommend, but this kind of obviates it, is Newer Tech makes a $40 hardware device. Do it what way? This way?
All the way out.
All the way out.
There you go.
Newer Tech makes a $40 hardware device. They call it the USB drive adapter. That's for using bare drives. It just connects to that connector, gives it some power. And it's really not something you want to use long term, but just for short term. This is great because you can have an external drive.
One thing to check, however, is that some of these kits, especially the lower price ones, they're actually USB 2.0 spec.
And it did, that's a huge difference because
that just takes more time.
Way more time.
Yeah.
So
USB 3 is nice, and it comes with the cable you need.
And that's the toolkit. Yeah, so that's got like the all the drivers you might need to take the existing
drive out. Wow, I can't believe this. This is really, it shows you that it's become a commoditized market, that somehow to differentiate their SSD, they have to do something like that. That would be great just to carry around. That should be in your back-to-school kit.
Yeah, except they don't let me carry sharp things anymore.
This is really cool. It's got different bits and all sorts of stuff. Father Robert, always a pleasure. I'm so glad that you are back after your tertianship. We missed you. We expect a lot more from you on know-how coming up every week, where you'll learn how to do stuff like, it's kind of the things we talk about. Look at that. It's got three different kinds of bits in there. That is so cool.
I will give people a little hint. We are going to increase some of the makery things that we do. And
I love those makery things.
We're dropping into CNC and laser cutting.
Whoa.
So, yeah. Whoa. Should be fun. Although the studio may smell like smoke.
We can live with it. You can find out more. What's your Twitter handle? People want to follow you.
You can find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. And if you follow me there, you can find out what I'm doing even when I'm not in the studio.
Nice.
And so that typically gives you little hints as to what might be coming up on future projects, on know-how, and this week in Enterprise Tech.
Father Robert, thank you so much.
I appreciate you
filling in for me on Wednesday on Windows Weekly.
Well, you were down in Anaheim finding out why Disneyland is no longer the happiest place on Earth.
I wasn't at Disneyland. I was Disneyland the week before.
Oh, okay.
I was down there for Podcast Movement, the podcast exposition.
Was it moving?
Yeah, I was really encouraged. There were a lot of new podcasters, young podcasters. People are very excited. Some of the big networks were there, like Panoply and Gimlet Media.
Okay. Yeah.
And a lot of advertisers. It was exciting. It told me that podcasting is doing well, is vital, and is exciting, and things are happening. You know what I liked the most? Hardly anybody knew who I was, which is great. Well, in previous podcast conferences, people knew who Adam Curry was. But there's so many new people there. It's great. It's a fresh blood coming into podcasting. I'm very excited about that. So it was a lot of fun. And the next one's in Philadelphia. We'll probably go down there or go over there and participate in that next year.
The place of podcast love, I guess.
Brotherly
podcasting.
Yeah. We thank you for being here. We had a great studio audience. Thank you for joining us. We invite you to come and join us. Tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. If you can't be here in person, you can watch the live stream, youtube.com/twit. Or actually, best thing to do is go to our website. That's twit.tv/live if you want to watch the live show. If you go to twit.tv/newsletter, you can subscribe to our newsletter, find out what's coming up in the week ahead. And, of course, if you're in the chat room, or rather watching the live stream, you should be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv so you can make nasty comments about our looks.
No, there are good people in there.
Great people in the chat room.
They're talking about Mary Jo Foley's new cat.
Right. See what I mean? No, we love that. We also make on-demand versions of everything we do available on our website, twit.tv, in this case, twit.tv/NSS. I should remind you that every day there's something new if you put Twit into your Amazon Echo daily briefing. We do flash briefings, and we always have something new. There'll be a piece from this show, from This Week in Enterprise Tech, This Week in Twit Tech, Windows Weekly. Every day there's something new, and it's a good part of kind of having some tech information in your Echo flash briefing. So do me a favor and go. You use the Echo app and go in there, and you'll find Twit under the possible sources for your flash briefing. Add us, will you? It'd be nice. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye.
Woo!
I want to do another gadget rap battle.